Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki.
Jai.
Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Giriraj Maharaj ki.
Jai.
All the kids being quiet ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gopremanande. Hari Om. Okay.
So we can start in
Yeah, there's many videos. Most ecstatic festival. Okay, so tonight, someone just open the door. Tonight we'll continue chapter 16. What is chapter 16 entitled? What is that one?
The Payobrata process of worship.
The Payobrata process of worship. Okay. So chapter 16, tonight we'll do verses 1 to 14. So the demigods have fled the heavenly planets in fear of the demons. And now we're here, what takes place. Sukadeva Goswami said, when Aditi's sons, the demigods had thus disappeared from heaven, and the demons had occupied their places, Aditi began lamenting as if she had no protector. After many, many days, the great, powerful sage Kashyapa Muni arose from a trance of meditation and returned home to see the ashram of Aditi, neither jubilant nor festive. O best of the Kurus, when Kashyapa Muni had been properly received and welcomed, he took his seat and then spoke as follows to his wife Aditi, who was very morose. O most gentle one, I wonder whether anything inauspicious has now taken place in regard to religious principles, the Brahmanas or the people in general, who are subject to the whims of death.
There are prescribed duties for all the inhabitants of this material world, especially for the Brahmanas, but also for the people in general, who are subject to the whims of death. Kashyapa Muni wondered whether the regulative principles, which are meant for the well-being of everyone, have been disobeyed. He accordingly continued his inquiries for 7 verses.
What other points? You guys are playing a whole card game here, or what's going on? Is that what you're going to do? You're going to play cards? Okay, if you want to play cards, you have to sit on the floor over there, because this will distract me too much. It's like I'm sitting there in Krishna's pastimes watching. Quickly, quickly, quickly. Cards, cards, cards. Over there, over there, over there. .com.au. Jelly. You play over there somewhere. Go in the corner. That's it. Sorry to disturb you, but otherwise I can't concentrate. So. That's it. Good boys. And after the class, maybe I'll come and play with you. Okay. So, any points?
Kashyapa Muni was inquiring. He saw the moroseness of his wife, and he was inquiring that the reason for her being unhappy is that someone's not following their duties properly, which will lead to distress and breakdown.
Yeah.
In other words, practical life, the duty of a husband is to ensure that dharma is properly maintained at the home, so that this process.
Good. Anything else?
When you follow the dharma, can be properly situated in material life. That will ultimately lead to liberation. Otherwise, everything will be disturbed.
Okay. So, when Dharma is followed within society, society is progressive. So, specifically, Kashyapa is saying, are the cows being looked after? Are the brahmanas being looked after? So these are the two most important elements of human society, right, is the brahmanas and the cows. The cows need to be protected. Just like at Hare Krishna Valley, we are protecting the cows. Now we have 7 cows. So gradually, we're increasing. 5 years or 10 years, we'll have 40. We'll build the herd up like that. One gentleman, one friend of ISKCON, he just gave a $25,000 donation to build a new goshala last week. So this is cow protection. People are enthused to protect the cows. This is dharma. This is a sign of civilization. And in the modern world, there is no protection of the cows. The cows are not seen as being valuable. The cows are seen as being food. So because they have the wrong mentality, then dharma is not being protected, and there is not auspiciousness in society. Society is a mess, and of course it will be a mess if you do not protect the cows. Yeah? And then similarly, Kashyapa says, are the brahmanas being protected? So the brahmanas also have to be protected. In other words, the government is meant to encourage and sustain and protect and maintain Brahminical culture. There should be Sanatan Dharma should be government sponsored, and it should be taught throughout society. So this requires brahmanas. So therefore the duty of society, of the government, is to make sure that everyone is getting the opportunity to study Sanatan Dharma. So there needs to be Brahminical culture. But this also is not being propagated. It's not being protected. It's not being maintained by the government. They put so much money into other areas of education, but not into a Sanatan Dharma. But this should be the main responsibility of the government. Just like in China, early this year, or late last year, then the government, they sponsored the printing of the Srimad Bhagavatam in Mandarin, in Chinese. So now it is being government sponsored. Srimad Bhagavatam is being printed and published by the Chinese government. Yeah, they gave. What's that?
How come? Because they have their own religious thing, persecution.
They're seeing it in terms of education, because they see it as Indian history or Indian studies, something like that. So we did not present it to them that it was religion. We presented it to them that it was history and like that. So then now they're sponsoring that. So this is the duty of the government, actually, is to sponsor Sanatan Dharma. So it needs a Brahminical culture. So society is only maintained when brahmanas, cows, women, old people, and children are protected. If they're not protected, then society does not flourish. So as soon as Kashyapa is in the forest, he's doing meditation, and then he comes, and then as soon as he comes, why are you so late? You can come, but you have to come on time. It's too late. You have to come at before 7:30. They all come at 7:30, these people. Yeah, next time, please. So, what was I speaking about? Yeah, Kashyapa has just come out of the forest. He is performing austerity in the forest. And then as soon as he comes out of the forest, immediately he sees there is some disturbance. He says, what is going on? He said, the cows are not being protected, or the brahman is not being protected, or people are not following dharma. Because as soon as these things happen, you see society is... If Kashyapa came out of the forest now and he walked straight into Western civilization, he would say, are the cows not being protected? Are the citizens not being protected? They're not following dharma? Okay, you can see as soon as people stop following these things, protecting cows, brahmanas, following Dharma, then you see society becomes disturbed. You can see it. It is natural. Any points?
What is the practical solution for the government to support or maintain a Brahminical culture in the society?
What
is the practical solution for the government, for any government for that matter, to maintain a Brahminical culture in the society?
What's the practical solution?
How can they do it, basically? Because initially
they have to give money to Islam. That's the practical way of doing it. Yeah. She has to be kept under control. She can't just walk around like that. See, all the other kids are sitting. Yeah, she stays in one place, or else she has to go outside. So they have to do practical support. It means they have to monetarily support ISKCON. That's the point. And then ISKCON can flourish, Sanatan Dharma can be propagated. Just like in India, the government are giving ISKCON money to run the Food for Life program. So like that. Any other points?
I'm going to start from the think tank of the society. So since they take all the decisions based on the Shastras, they are rulers, okay, Akshatriya should take them. So that was for whose point Prabhupada did say that all the ministers in the government should be Brahmanas. They should be second edition. That's the problem.
Yeah.
He wrote to the he wrote to the Prime Minister. I recommend all the ministers in the parliament should be second edition.
Anything else? Okay. O my wife, who are very much attached to household life, if the principles of religion, economic development, and satisfaction of the senses are properly followed in household life, one's activities are as good as those of a transcendentalist. I wonder whether there has been any discrepancies in following these principles. Janeshwar.
In this verse, Aditi has been addressed by her husband, Kashyapumuni and Grihamedini, which means one who is satisfied in household life for sense gratification. Generally, those who are in household life pursue sense gratification in the field of activities performed for material results. Such Grihamedinis have only one aim in life, sense gratification. Therefore, it is said, Yanmaitanadi Grihamedi Sukamhi Kucham. The householder's life is based on self gratification, and therefore, the happiness derived from it is very meager. Nonetheless, the Vedic process is so comprehensive that even in householder life, one can adjust his activities according to the regulated principles of dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. One's aim should be to achieve liberation, but because one cannot at once give up sense gratification. In the Shastras, there are injunctions describing how to follow the principles of religion, economic development, and sense gratification. As explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Karima se hi apar garsya nartho, arthayo par upakalpate. All occupational engagements are certainly meant for ultimate liberation. They should never be performed for material gain. Those who are in household life should not think that religion is meant to improve the process of householder's sense gratification. Household life is also meant for advancement in spiritual understanding, by which one can ultimately gain liberation from the material clutches. One should remain in household life with the aim of understanding the ultimate goal of life, tattva jnanasa. Then household life is as good as the life of a yogi. Kashyapa Muni therefore inquired from his wife whether the principles of religion, economic development and sanctification were being properly followed in terms of the Shastric injunctions. as soon as one deviates from the injunctions of the Shastra, the purpose of household life is immediately lost in confusion.
Okay. What other points? Anything else?
Any ashram for that matter is meant only to aim for liberation and reach the great Krishna liberation. Anyone for that matter, even any ashram.
Yeah, that's good. So, Prabhupada says that grihastha life is a license for sense gratification. The goal of human life is not sense gratification. Prema pumata mahan. The goal of human life is prema, love for Krishna. It is to develop pure, devotional service attitude towards Krishna. That is the goal of life. So, sense gratification is a material goal. Because we are mixed. We are not pure. So because we are not pure, then we still have some desire for sense gratification. Our main desire is devotional service. That's our main desire. But still, we are not pure, so there is some mix of a desire for sense gratification. So grihastha life is a license for that. Okay, you can have some sense gratification, but it is restricted. It is not unlimited. Because if you have unlimited sense gratification, you ruin your opportunity to become self-realized or Krishna conscious. Whereas, if you have some license for sense gratification, you can have some set of sense gratification, your mind is peaceful, your senses are satisfied, but it will just be a support so that you can focus on the main business of human life, which is to develop love for Krishna, to develop pure devotional service mentality towards Krishna. So, in grihastha life, as Prabhupada says, one has to practice sense control so that he becomes a yogi, as Prabhupada says in the purport, or Rupa Goswami says, a Goswami, one who has control of the senses. So that is the actual standard of grihastha life. Therefore, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's spiritual master, he says that the grihasthas are brahmachari grihastha, or grihastha brahmachari, which means even though you're in grihastha life, you're still practicing sense control. And there must be control of the senses, there must be control of the mind. That's how you progress in devotional service. Because we are not perfect, then we still have to have some sense gratification. So grihastha ashram is a facility for that. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who was the grihastha acharya, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that grihastha ashram is a good position for the Vaishnavas in Kali Yuga. Because in Kali Yuga, we are contaminated. It's rare that someone will be brahmachari or brahmacharini or sannyasi. That is rare in Kali Yuga. Most of the devotees you'll see, they are grihastha. Right? But that is a good position in Kali Yuga. Because Kali Yuga means the atmosphere is contaminated. Which means by the time we come to devotional service, we are contaminated. So then it is hard to practice pure brahmachari life or sannyas life. That is difficult in Kali Yuga. So therefore, now one is given opportunity that you can still progress in spiritual life. You can make that your main focus. But you can have some facility for sense gratification. But it is restricted, not unlimited. You can't do whatever you want. You do whatever you want, then you pay the price. Just like in most places in the world, you know, if you break the law, you pay the price. That is the system. So in devotional service, right, If you break the law of vana, of ashram, you don't follow the regulative principles, you pay the price. There is a reaction in Krishna. So, any points?
The Prabhupada also said that sex only for procreation.
Yeah, that's the high standard. As we said yesterday, we were discussing, that is the standard for the initiated devotees. If you cannot follow all of the regulative principles, which is difficult in Kali Yuga, that's a high standard in Kali Yuga, you don't take initiation. Simple as that. Doesn't mean you're not a devotee. Does not mean that Krishna does not accept your service. But it means if you're unable to follow all of the regulative principles properly, right, then you don't take initiation. But you can still come to the temple, you can still chant rounds, you can still make advancement, you can still do service like that. And then gradually you can overcome your material desires. But we have to be careful, because sometimes people get pushed. Right? Quick, take initiation. But that initiation is a high thing in Kali Yuga. Not everyone will come to that easily. And Prabhupada actually said, not everyone will get second initiation. He said that. He said that only the Brahminical devotees, they will get second initiation. Not everyone has that inclination. So first initiation, most people can get. But even that is very high in Kali Yuga. So you have to follow properly. If you're not following, don't take initiation. Doesn't mean you're not a devotee. So, any other point? I wonder whether, because of being too attached to the members of your family, you failed to properly receive uninvited guests, who therefore were not welcomed and went away. So, Mahatma Prabhu.
It is the duty of the householder to receive guests, even if the guest be an enemy. When a guest comes to one's home, one should properly receive him by standing up and offering him a seat. It is enjoined, Grahe, Kratrum, Api, Prabhutam, Vistam, or Prabhagyam. If even an enemy comes to one's home, one should receive him in such a way that the guest will forget that his host is an enemy. According to one's position, one should properly receive anyone who comes to one's home. At least a seat and a glass of water should be offered, so that the guest will not be displeased. Kashyap Muni inquired from Aditi whether disrespect had been shown to such guests or Atithi. The word Atithi refers to one who comes without an invitation.
Okay. Any points?
The guest must be received with etiquette and humility and also sincerity. You can't give anything, at least give a glass of water and a deceit.
In India, there is a saying that Atithi Devo, the guest is the gathered as a god. In some respects.
Any other points?
It says the last word, the word Atithi refers to one who comes without
any invitation. Amen. What if
somebody
comes to
take
advantage
of you,
break
the house and
come? Like a thief.
Yeah.
Then you should stand up and respect him and say,
"Show me a stick."
Yeah. Say, "Please have a seat." Would you like some prasad? And sell him a Bhagavad Gita. Any other points? That was a good one. I think that was the best one this year. So. I'll remember that one.
You remember what the media said?
Huh?
You remember vitamin D as well?
That was the best.
No,
but we're going to write a book. We're going to write a book soon. So, but that one will be in the book. That was good. Any other points? So this is Vedic culture. Culture means civilization. This is how to treat people properly. Now, if someone comes to your home, they have to be given all respect. Now, that is the system. And when we do deity worship, right, we're offering the articles to the deity. That is the system of respect of receiving a guest. When the guest comes, then you create nice scents in the house. You light the incense, the agarbatti, the dhu. Fragrances are sprinkled around. You see in the descriptions in the Bhagavatam that the elephants, they would shower rose water on the streets in Dwarka. That should be the system. When someone comes, then you create some nice atmosphere like that. Then, when we're worshipping the deity, then what do we offer after the agarbatti? What's next? No, we offer the...
Lemon water.
Huh? No. When you're worshipping the deity, when we do aarti, right, then what is next?
Lamp.
Yeah. Well, the deep, lamp. So you light the house, you turn on the lights. Right? Previously, if the guest came, then you would go around and you would light the house. Like that. That's why we're offering the aarti to the deity. We're lighting everything for the deity. We're imagining... The deity has arrived. We are the sevak. We are the servant. So let's create some nice atmosphere. Nice fragrance. Then light everything nicely. These days we just turn on the switch. We just, and then everything's on. But previously you would have to light everything like that. Then what do we offer next? Water. So then when the guest comes, usually the guest has traveled on foot. These days we just drive to your house so we're not tired. Yeah, but if I have to walk from here to St. Kilda Road just to see you, I'll be tired. So then you offer some water. Right? What you wash the person's feet. You see, when the guru comes, we wash the feet. And when the guest comes, you wash the feet because the feet are tired. And then Prabhupada says that if you wash up to the knee, you become refreshed. Prabhupada said if you can't take full bath, then just wash up to the knee and you become refreshed. Before you take rest, that's a good practice as well. Just to wash yourself up to the knee. And if you don't take full bath, just washes the knee. And it like refreshes the body, cools the body, and then you can rest nicely. So the person needs to rest. So when we're offering the conch to the deity, we're offering water. Please wash your hands, wash your feet, bathe if you need to. You know, if someone comes, they've been traveling a long time, they come to your house, you say, take bath, if you want to take bath, take bath. Like, refresh yourself. And then what do we offer next? When we're offering aarti to the deity. What is next? Cloth. Cloth. So after the person takes bath, then you offer them fresh clothes. Would you like a fresh dhoti? Would you like a fresh sari? Fresh cloth we offer. In the spiritual world, Krishna only wears the cloth once. Krishna never puts on the same clothes again. Right? And the great kings in the past, they would always wear fresh clothes. They never wear the same thing twice. That is opulence. Duryodhan, you know Duryodhan? Yeah. So he took a vow he would never eat anyone's remnants. Right? Including his own. So whenever they offered him something, he would take one mouthful and they'd have to take the bowl away. And he would eat a lot because he's a kshatriya. So he eats, you know, a big meal. So one mouthful and then take it away, one mouthful. So just someone was standing there just putting in front of him, fresh, right there. Because he took that vow, I will never take anyone's remnants, including my own. This is opulence. So the deity does not wear the same clothes. He has fresh clothes. You're offering fresh cloth. So when someone comes to your house, then you offer cloth. Just like if you go to Bengal, to Mayapur, sometimes I go to my devotee friend's house in Mayapur. Then when you leave, they offer you cloth. Here's a new dhoti, here is a gamsha. It's cultured like that to offer. And then what do we offer next? Pushpa, which means we offer the garland. So we offer a garland to the person. Someone comes to your house, and then they arrive, you make them comfortable, they bathe, offer them cloth, dry their feet, if they know. And then you can offer a garland to the person. Sandalwood pulp, like that. You can offer these things. And then next we offer?
Chamara.
Yeah, so keep the insects away, like that. Keep the flies away in, like that. Just like one time, someone was offering the chamara to Jaipataka Swami, and the fly was buzzing around his face, and the devotee was standing like 2 feet away, just going like this. And Mara said, "What are you doing?" So the fly is there, like, that's what the chamara is for. So he took the chamara, and then he got the fly away. That's what it's for. It's not there just so you go like this. Yeah, that's not what the chamara is for. The chamara is to keep the insects away, like that. That's what it's for. And then what is next? Summertime, we offer the peacock fan. Why do we offer the peacock fan? To keep them cool. We fan them to keep them cool. Right? So in summertime, then nice breeze is there. So this is how to receive the guest. Right? And we offer bhog to the deity. And then we offer prasad to the guest. And when someone comes. So Prabhupada says minimum you offer someone is a straw mat. Right? Somewhere to sit. Right? Some water to drink. And sweet words. Right? So this is the minimum that you offer. But if you have more, you have to give more. You see in India, you know, people, they offer the deity some dried fruits and nuts, and then they have big thali for themselves. This is the system. People do this. You know, offer the deity just some little thing. You know, that little sugar. Yeah, all those little white sugar pump ball things. Yeah, cheapest thing you can offer to the deity. Here, Krishna, please take that. And then I'll have roti and chapati and dal, chal, and rice and sabji and pakora and chutney. Maybe sometimes they're offering, but you see, sometimes the deity is not getting what the family is getting. Sometimes they're doing like that. So the point is that the guest should get the best. Right? And what should he get? He should get what has been offered to the deity. The deity has received the best. That's why when the deity is in our house, we offer the deity the best thing we can. And then we give the remnants to the guest. Any points? Which verse? Homes from which guests go away without having been received, even with an offering of a little water, are like those holes in the field, which are the homes of jackals. Jad Bharat Prabhu.
What about in a field there may be holes made by snakes and mice?
Some better is well.
In a field there may be holes made by snakes and mice, but when there are very big holes, it may be supposed that jackals live there. Suddenly, no one goes to take shelter in such homes. Thus, the homes of human beings, where atithis, uninvited guests, are not properly received, are like the homes of jackals.
Any points? So, we should not be like jackals. We should not mistreat the guest. If the guest comes, then you have to offer the best. Not when the guest comes and the guest thinks, you know, I won't go back to that person's house again. Or, when someone comes over for prasadam, then how much prasadam should you give them? When you, when you're serving someone, you give them as much as they want. You don't give them less, you don't give them more. Sometimes you go to people's places and they try to force feed you. That's not Vedic culture. Yeah, when I was in Adelaide many years ago, then we went to one congregation member's house and they told me, they said, in our family, when someone comes to our house, we will feed them so much they will never come back again. And they thought that was a good thing. But they fed so much, it wasn't pleasant. It wasn't nice, because they're just like forcing you. It's not nice. So we should not be like jackals. People should want to come to our house. Not that when they come, they do not get looked after properly, or that we force feed them and then same thing, becomes unpleasant. So we should give the right amount. Just like one time Prabhupada was in Los Angeles and they were cooking for Prabhupada his lunch, and they were cooking so many items. But what did Prabhupada eat for lunch? Every day. Rice, chapati, dal, sabji. You know, if you go to Vrindavan in Prabhupada's house, they have a museum, and you see the brass cooker which Prabhupada used to travel with. So he'd have rice on one level, dal on one level, a couple of subjects, and then make chapatis. So everything was in that cooker. That's how they would, Prabhupada would cook for himself, and then when the servants cooked, they would use that same cooker. So one time in LA, Prabhupada walked past the kitchen, and the Mahārājas were cooking for Prabhupada, but they were cooking so many preparations. Prabhupada didn't eat so many preparations. Lunchtime, even though he was Jagat Guru, but for lunch he would just have rice, dal, chapati, 2-3 subjects, that was it. That was Prabhupada's meal. So, they were cooking so many preparations. Hey, where is all this noise coming from? Hands up if you're being quiet. Very good. So, they were cooking so much for Prabhupada, and Prabhupada walked past, he looked in, and he said, are you cooking for you or are you cooking for me? Because I do not eat like that. Prabhupada was not eating like that. So if you're cooking for Prabhupada, then you cook what Prabhupada wants. One time Prabhupada was giving class, he said to one devotee, bring me some water. So the devotee went to the kitchen, he poured some milk, and he brought that to Prabhupada, because milk is more opulent than water. And Prabhupada looked at him and he said, I did not ask for milk. So you give the person what they want, that is seva, not what you want. So when you're serving somebody, don't give them what you want. Oh, I have more. And he doesn't want more. So you give them what they want. That is proper service. So any points?
See, the overfeeding comes because some people are very shy. They don't want to eat in the first house. So that's why some people
and they eat all.
Yeah, they have that system. They always give you, I mean, you give a little bit more. That's like some Indian thing. You know, they always give you a little bit more than what you want. So, you know, if you only want 4 chapatis, when you get to 2, you start saying, no, that's enough. Because you know they're going to give you a couple more anyway. So. So you work it all out. I mean, you have it all worked out before you get there, you know. Yeah, after the first serve, then you start saying, oh, I like that, because you know you're going to have more anyway, but you just want to start slowing a bit. So that system has to be there. But personally, I'm not shy. I just have whatever I want. Maybe in India they feel self-conscious or something.
Not everybody like that.
Yeah, maybe some people are shy, so. Like that. So you can give a little bit more. You know, that's in Indian people serve you, they're always going to give you a little bit more than what you want. So a little bit more is okay, but sometimes they just force it on you and it's not good. Except when you're having a feast. Because Prabhupada said when you have a feast, you eat up to the neck. Lord Chaitanya would make everyone eat up to the neck. And so we have a feast, Prabhupada said, once a week, Sunday feast. So once a week we can have a feast. Eat as much as you want, that's no problem. Just like in Fiji, we're having a feast. We're eating too much. Too much ice cream. How much is too much? 2 or 3 liters, that is too much.
Per person.
Yeah, they're really per person. I'm serious, per person. You know Carlos Sambara Prabhu? He's temple president of Auckland, 63-year-old Prabhupada disciple. He was eating 2 or 3 liters of ice cream right in front of me. And I did not want to eat so much because I was feeling a little sick. But he was just forcing me. So I was like, I just had to surrender. So I probably ate like 1 liter or something.
And you survived.
What's that?
And you survived.
Actually, I didn't feel too bad the next day. I didn't feel too bad. Just because when you're in the association of devotees, everyone starts getting festive and they have more. And then Carlos Lombaro Prabhu, he was telling us, he said, if Indrajumna Swami was here, then everyone would be eating more. Because Indrajumna Swami, he makes everyone eat more. Have more. So it was very nice. But that should be once a week, or once a year, like that. Not like every day you're eating like too much. Prabhupada said, rice style sabji chapati. Prabhupada said, that should be our system. Prabhupada came to Sydney in 1972, and devotees for lunch, they were having halava. Prabhupada said, stop that. He said, this is for once a week. Not every day you're eating halava. Just simple prasad.
But
and
is there anything after eating 2 or 3 liters of ice cream?
No, that's all they ate. That's all they ate, just ice cream.
Nothing.
Because we had breakfast, we had lunch, and in the evening they brought out ice cream, like 15-liter boxes, like big box of ice cream. They started serving it, and then I had like some, I think they had pasta or something, so I had some pasta. And then, but they, Dwijabara, Prabhu and Kalasabara, they went straight for the ice cream. They just ate 2 or 3 liters of ice cream, nothing else.
Somewhere I have read sannyasis should only have 1 meal in a day.
Sometimes things are mentioned like that. It's not compulsory, but Srila Prabhupada said a sannyasi should reduce eating and sleeping. Prabhupada says that sannyasi should reduce eating and sleeping. So it doesn't have to be. Prabhupada didn't eat once a day. Prabhupada ate breakfast, little, lunch, not so much, and then dinner, sometimes you'd have something. Always hot milk in the evening. Sometimes you'd have some paratha, like that. So Prabhupada did not eat once a day. But Prabhupada says that, actually he says in one purport, he said, you should only eat once a day, he says that. But Hari Sori Prabhu started doing that, and Prabhupada said, no, you should eat more. Like, you know, regular meals. Like that, so. But sannyasi should reduce eating and sleeping. Any other point?
If you eat less,
then you feel more. If you eat less. Yeah. Prabhupada says that for an old person, to eat less is a good mistake. And he said for a young person, to eat more is a good mistake. Because a young person, they can eat so much and they'll digest it. Doesn't matter. But for an old person, if they eat less, that's good. Because that would be good for their body.
I thought he said they are perfect.
No. Prabhupada said it like that, so it sounded like that. But
so that old people should eat less.
Old people should eat less and young people should eat more.
Yes.
Because the young people eat small, they'll still digest anyway.
Right.
The old people, they eat less, that's better for their health. Just like one time I was at Vrindavan at the Gurukul, and they had a pizza feast. And the kids were only like 7 years old. Like, you know, a bit older than these kids. Like, you know, 7-year-old kids. Like, and I could not believe how much pizza they ate. Like 13, 14 pieces each. Like they would just go, wow, like that. And I was eating a lot, but these kids were eating so much, you know. But next day they were fine, no problem. Because when you're young, you can digest, no problem. That's the problem. So when you're young, you eat more, that's a good mistake. But when you're old, if you eat less, that's a good mistake. Eat less. Okay. O chaste and auspicious woman, when I left home for other places, were you in so much anxiety that you did not offer oblations of ghee into the fire? By worshipping the fire and the brahmanas, a householder can achieve the desired goal of residing in the higher planets. For the sacrificial fire and the brahmanas are to be considered the mouth of Lord Vishnu, who is the supersoul of all the demigods. Chaitanya Prabhu.
According to Vedic system, fire sacrifice is held in order to offer oblations of ghee, grains, fruits, flowers, and so on. So then Lord Vishnu may eat and be satisfied. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 26, if one offers me with love and devotion of these flowers, fruit, or water, I'll accept it. Therefore, all these items may be offered in the sacrificial fire and Lord Vishnu will be satisfied. Similarly, Brahmana Bhojana, feeding of the Brahmanas, is also recommended. For when the Brahmanas eat sumptuous remnants of food after Yajna, this is another way that Lord Vishnu himself eats. Therefore, the Vedic principles recommend that in every festival or ceremony, one offer oblations to the fire and give sumptuous food for the Brahmanas to eat. By such activities, a householder may be elevated to the heavenly planet and similar places in the higher planetary systems.
Mm. Any points there? Good. Anything else?
So the Lord Vishnu is good. He enjoys when the
Ramana does. Yeah. So the system is that we worship the deity opulently. That is the point. Now, in Kali Yuga, we don't do so much fire sacrifice, jagya. We do jagyas here when someone gets initiated or on the festival. It's not like we do jagya every day. In Mayapur and Bhakti Vijayapuna Maharaja's Gurukul, they do jagya every day. But generally in ISKCON, we don't do everyday jagya. So our jagya, our sacrifice, is deity worship. The deity must be worshipped opulently, with first-class ingredients. So that is hey, who is making this noise? Okay, you have to quieten down a little bit, huh? So the deity must be worshipped with first-class ingredients. That is the system. There must be the best of everything is offered to the deity of Krishna. So this is the way that we become purified in Kali Yuga. It's not by jagya, it's not by sacrifice, but it's by offering the best ingredients to the deity, worshipping the deity opulently. So Prabhupada said the deity must be worshipped with opulence. And Prabhupada instructed the householders that do not put within your homes, the deities, if that means the deities in the temple will be neglected. The system is that the householders, they should worship Radha Balabha first. Right? And the deity worship in your home, that should be second. Not that you will install deities in your house and then you will stay at home and worship the deity. But if you are Brahmin initiated, your first responsibility in the community is to worship Radha Balabha. To go on Itai Jagannath Balaram Subhadra. That is your first responsibility. And every Brahminically initiated devotee or Brahmana devotee within the community, they should be doing deity worship. You should be worshipping the deity. And this is how we become purified in Kali Yuga. So Prabhupada said here in Melbourne, Prabhupada said the deity worship should be gorgeous, which means very opulent. The deity should be worshipped very opulently. And you'll see that Melbourne Temple, Aniruddha Prabhu and Chintarupa Mataji, they've maintained very high standard of deity worship, which was started by Kalma Prabhu and Balaram Prabhu. So this should, actually it was started by Prabhupada. So there should be a very high standard of deity worship. And if the deity is worshipped, Prabhupada said, gorgeously, then Prabhupada said, then you will become gorgeous. In other words, if you worship the deity with first-class paraphernalia and first-class devotion and first-class service, then you will also become purified. Your consciousness will become purified. You will get the result. It's too distracting. Mataji? Otherwise, I have to go outside. So everything should be first class for the deities. And then we will also become purified. But if you're not offering the deity the best of everything, you do not become purified. So the best of everything in our, up to the point of our ability, as much as we can, we should offer the best. So Prabhupada said that we should not offer real jewels to the deities, even though that's the best. But he said in Kali Yuga, people will come and steal the jewels. So therefore he said, you offer the imitation jewels. Don't offer the real jewels to the deities, because it will become a problem. It will lead to problems in Kali Yuga. But still, the mentality should be, you should offer the best of what you can to the deities. Right? And then as Prabhupada says, to the brahmanas, which means to the Vaishnavas, to the devotees. So you offer the best you can to the deities, and then? Right? Their remnants are then offered to the devotees. So we offer the best prasad to the deities, the best bhoga to the deities. When it becomes prasad, then that is fed to the devotees and to the guests. Like that. So that is our system. And Prabhupada said the clothes of the deities, they can then be offered to the children. Right? And the children can make outfits out of the deity's clothes. They can wear the deity's old clothes. Or with the old sets which have been offered to the deities, and then they become old and the deities cannot use them anymore. Then Prabhupada said you can make them into clothes, costumes, and then the children can wear them. And they will get purified by wearing the deity's remnants. So everything which is offered to the deities, then that should be offered to the Vaishnavas. So this is the system here, which has been mentioned. Right? The deity should be worshipped and the devotee should be worshipped. So, any points?
The last sentence, is it only the heavenly planet and five planetary systems, or can it be all of the heaven as well?
What do you mean?
It says that by doing such activities, you can go, you can be elevated to the heavenly planet.
Yeah, it depends.
Or higher planetary systems.
Yeah.
They are on material.
Depends what your motivation is.
Okay.
What's in your heart? Do you want to go to Swaga? Do you want to go to Indraloka? Or do you want to go to Goloka?
Go.
Okay, so then if that's your motivation, then that's...
Okay.
We have to cultivate that desire.
Okay.
In this translation, Kashifa Muni is inquiring about the gaps or the faults in the yajnas and Brahmana Bhojana, right? But I do understand from other places that in the Vedic systems, when the husband is not there and when the wife is alone, generally yajnas are not performed. The yajnas are performed by the male, and Brahmana Bhojanas will be done by both of them, I mean, both by the couple, not by the male. In this case, how can he kind of fault that?
That she is not doing it all. Yeah, I'm not sure. Because generally, like in the pastime of the Jagik Brahmanas in the 10th canto in the Krishna book in Vrindavan, then they were assisting the husbands to do the yajna.
Yes.
But maybe it can be said that Aditi, that she is organizing that the Brahmanas continue to do the yajnas while Kashyapa is not there.
Okay.
Not that she is doing the Jagger herself, but she's making sure it is continuing. Okay. Which verse?
10.
O great-minded lady, are all your sons faring well? Seeing your withered face, can I perceive that your mind is not tranquil. How is this so? Aditi said, O my respected Brahmana husband, all is well with the Brahmanas, the cows, religion, and the welfare of all of other people. O master of the house, the three principles of Dharma, Artha, and Karma flourish in household life, which is consequently full of good fortune. So Prabhupada points out within the purport that we should not be a grihamedi. Grihamedi means that we make the house the center of our life. And we have this kind of mentality in the modern world that people think the goal of life is to have a nice house. And now they have TV shows about having a nice house. The Block. And My House Rules and all these television shows. And it is glorified that you just have the best house you can. It becomes like the center of their existence. But for a devotee, that is not the center of our existence. Sense gratification must be renounced. Right? As you practice devotional service over your life, you must see that the desire for sense gratification becomes less. Right? As you've been a devotee longer and longer and longer, 1 year, 2 year, 5 year, 10 year, 20 year, 30 year, 40 year, 50 year. You have to see that as time goes by, your desire for sense gratification becomes minimalized or less. And that your desire for service to Krishna becomes more. So that should be the system. Because in the modern world, the grihamedis, their desire is for sense gratification. It's just to have an opulent house. And that's the way the world is these days. You know, work hard so you can have an opulent house. But for a devotee, we just keep our existence simplified. We just live middle class. Right? We live in a nice suburb, Albert Park. It's like an upper class suburb, right? But we just live middle class. We don't get caught up in having the best cars and the nicest houses and that. Just live middle class and we just serve Krishna. So that is the devotee's mood. Sense gratification becomes less and service to Krishna becomes more. Okay. Well, beloved husband, the fires, guests, servants, and beggars are all being properly cared for by me. Because I always think of you, there is no possibility that any of the religious principles would be neglected. Oh, my Lord, since you are a Prajapati and are personally my instructor in the principles of religion, where is the possibility that all my desires will not be fulfilled? O son of Marichi, because you are a great personality, you are equal toward all the demons and demigods who are born either from your body or from your mind and who possess one or another of the three qualities, sattva-guna, raja-guna, or tamaguna. But although the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Controller, is equal toward all living entities, he is especially favorable to the devotees. So as Prabhupada points out, Krishna protects his devotees. So she is asking also, please bless your son, your sons, the demigods, that they will take the throne again. Because when the devotees are running the universe is peaceful. And when the devotees are not running the universe, it becomes
chaotic.
And you see the modern world is chaotic because the government is not devote. They are not devotees. So there are problems like that. So she wants everyone to be peaceful and happy, so she wants the devotees. So she asks, please bring the demigods back. The world will be peaceful once again. Any points? I'm not 100% sure. Okay. Sure. Parvati. So this week we'll continue at 16. Okay, Gosses for a second. So, Canto 7, chapter 5, verse 32. The next verse is Canto 8, chapter 9, verse 29. So it is 8, 9, 29. And third verse is Canto 8, chapter 12, verse 43. So 8, 12, 43. So they are the three KMVs, the merits. Now, the exam will be at the end of chapter 16. And tonight we begin chapter 16. So it means the exam will be in about 2 or 3 weeks. So that means your open book essays will be due in about 3 weeks. And your oral presentations and your closed book exam will be. So we'll announce when in the next couple of weeks. So we'll see you next week. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.